the Lee Harden Podcast. He likes too many things. It's the Lee Harden Podcast. He likes too many things. He likes too many, likes too many things. Too many things.
Welcome, everybody, to Hardhead, the Lee Harden Podcast. That song is true. I do like too many things. And speaking of that song, go check out the band Hello Kelly or the other project Francie and the First Time Feeling. Both projects were created by Francois Goudreau, and he's the guy singing on the podcast song you just heard. Now this week, I don't have Crabtree with me. I do not have my co-host. He's being a responsible husband and father of three, hanging out with his kids while they're on spring break. We'll catch up on all of that when he's back. But this week, I have Dave Landau. Dave Landau is one of my favorite comedians. He's one of the funniest guys off the cuff in conversation. He is the host of a show on Blaze TV called Normal World. You can watch it on YouTube. And just a heads up, I don't know who listens to this show, but if you have kids, just a warning, Dave's not a clean comedian. Doesn't mean he's filthy, but he's not clean either. So you have your warning. And that's all I'll say about that. We had a great time on the show. I wish I would have paid for premium on Zoom so our conversation could have went longer. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And guys, I've rambled on way too long. Here's the show. Dave Landau, I am so excited that you're hanging out with me on this podcast. Thank you for being here, man. I'm a huge fan of what you do.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. This is so fun because it means a lot. Because you're a guy that's in high demand. You're all over the place. You've had some successful shows, and the fact that you personally emailed me back, it wasn't an agent, it wasn't through other people, and you were so chill about making time for it. So that means the world to me. So that I love that.
Oh yeah, dude, my pleasure, man. No worries. I appreciate you saying that. I'll pretend you're right. Where are you from?
Oh, I'm in Middle Tennessee near Nashville. So,
oh, sweet. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So you're going to be
here in Nashville.
Yeah, you're going to be here. You're going to be here pretty soon at Zany's
Easter Sunday. I didn't know it was Easter Sunday when I took the gig, but either way, I'm looking forward to it.
That's okay. You're not a Christian. That's fine.
I'm kidding.
Kidding.
Catholic.
What day is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's on a Thursday. So go on.
Oh man, but I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure. Actually, no, I will be there. You get this as a comedian. I'm gonna try to make it is one of the worst things you could hear from someone. Yeah. Do you deal with that a lot when you like or? At this point, you've probably given up where you're like, oh, I've got this friend in Missouri. I'm going to let them know I'm going to come. At one point, I'm pretty sure you probably were doing that. And then you would hear I'll try to make it. And then they just don't. And after a while, you probably stop asking.
Yeah, eventually. Well, yeah, it's like, can you make it to here? Can you make it to here? Then you're a half an hour from there. And it's like, you're almost here. And it's like, just get in your car and drive at this point. Or don't see me. It's like, can you be in my living room? Can you? It's
yes.
Like this never ending, you know, quest to be exactly where somebody is. It's like, look, I'm coming as close as I can. I'm sorry if I'm not. If I'm in Idaho, it's because I'm as close to you as I'm going to get.
Right. They like said yes. I get that all too well. It's like, oh, you should book this around this time. You're like, or let me know when the next show is. Like, this is the next show, the one I'm going to be at. That's the next one.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah. No, I just don't care anymore. It's like, show up, don't, whatever, people will. It's all good.
Right. Because you're at a point where you don't need to do that. You're like, I've got a crew that's going to come see where I'm going to be at. But I've had to, I was in Holland, Michigan this past Sunday, and 2 months prior, there was a buddy that I was like, hey, I'm coming in 2 months. And then a month, gave him a month warning. Then he goes, can you notify me closer to the date, please? I'm just like, I don't work for you. Like,
right. I can't, I have a calendar. Like, it's not that hard to come to a show.
Right. You have a phone, put it in your phone. Yep. Like, I'm sure when you saw, you know, Bargatze at the arena. I doubt he sent you a few messages telling you
probably did not. Maybe he did. I don't know how close you are, but yeah, you see it all the time, man.
Yeah, just let me know. You're like, I did. Yeah.
Yes. Just now.
Oh gosh. You were at Brad Garrett's, was it last week?
No, probably like a month ago, right around Valentine's Day. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There was a delay. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I thought it was last week for some reason. Does that place run for like a week? Is that how Brad Garrett's works?
Yeah. Monday through Sunday. You just do one show a night, which is actually very nice. Many clubs used to do two, which is just, I hate. And you just do one show night, very easy. And then the second Brad's out there, you have your, you know, like you get to do like maybe 20 minutes as a headliner because Brad's out there messing with the crowd and everything. So you get paid the same. Yeah, exactly. That's why it's the best. It's fantastic. And I love him. He's a genuinely great human being. So.
All right. I was going to ask all of that because I know it's his name, but I'm like, all right, is he a guy that actually shows up to his club and does he do time there or is he just, it's just his name? But it sounds like he's a guy that actually shows up and performs at his own place.
Oh, yeah, constantly. And he loves comedy. I mean, when he's not filming a show or doing something like that, he's always at his club. And that's something that I love to see. And, you know, I'd say you can probably see him live there. I'd say at least like 10 days out of a month.
That's awesome. That's free stage time for him. Like,
oh, for sure.
Dude, I love that. Dude. So I first saw you on a show a few years back. And I was like, all right, this guy's hilarious. But I knew I could hang out with the Dave because I saw you were a big fan of graphic tees, which I am as well. That was a very emphatic yes. I like where this is going. All right. The first thing I noticed was the Matt Foley cartoon shirt, which I also had. I still have that shirt, but I was like, oh my gosh, someone else knows this shirt exists.
Right. Yeah, well, Matt Foley's, first of all, one of the best characters ever, written by Bob Odenkirk originally for Second City, and then obviously Chris Farley played it. It's like, yeah, I love that. I have a few Matt Foley shirts, but I used to wear.
Is it from that website? From that website. Yeah. Chive? Chive.
Chive, yeah, is where I found those. I found a couple on the road, but yeah, that's where I found it, yeah.
Yep, I've got a few. I've got the it's another Farley shirt, but it's him in the Chicago Bears sketch. Where
that's awesome.
The legend. I've got a Mount Rushmore of Bill Murray as well. So
okay, that's sweet.
Yeah. So I love that shirt.
I have a Bigger and McCracken from that place. Oh. And I also have Chris Farley giving the middle finger with the toy and Tommy Boy with the plastic hand.
Brilliant.
I have Yeah. I just love all that crap. I don't know. It's like, it just makes me happy. And like, I'm huge into bands. So it's like, that's partially why I'm into graphic tees. Cause I can tell by behind you, just looking at all the Telecasters and semi hollow bodies and stuff and Stratocasters you're very much into it. So it's like, yeah, I've always been a huge music fan. So buying stuff at concerts, all that, it's just amazing to me.
You're kind of blowing my mind right now. You not only pointed out guitars, but the types of guitars, dude, do you play?
Yeah, I did when I was in middle school. I wish I still did. I have a bass I mess around with. I'm not great with it. I had I can't tell from here if that's an Epiphone behind you. The Tan Burst.
Yeah, the 335. That is actually a Gibson. Yeah. We You get more money the older you get. So we shelled out for the actual Gibson. We didn't.
Nice.
Yeah, we didn't do the Epiphone this time. So
yeah, nice. Yeah, like I had an Epiphone bass that was all cherry red, like the one right behind you that was semi-hollow in high school, and I sold it for drugs, and I really, really wish I wouldn't have because I loved that thing, and I've never found one that looks anything like it. Like I look online, I found a couple things that I think it was made in Japan. I'm almost positive. There's a couple that I found resembling it, but I've never been able to find that bass again.
Oh, you know, I've got a few guitars I've gotten rid of. It wasn't for drugs, but it was like, I sold a guitar. This is really embarrassing. I didn't think I was going to tell this. I, in college, decided I was going to join a football league, and I never played football a day in my life. And this was like grown men tackle football. And I really wanted to do it. So I sold a guitar for either the equipment or the league fee. And I played a total of two snaps at the end of a game, or at the end of two different games, where I just came in for a kneel down, and
okay,
yeah, waste of money. And I was such a doofus. And that was a guitar that I can't rebuy. I can't find it anywhere. eBay, Reverb. I have looked, and it's not meant to be.
And that's a shame, man. Yeah, it's the same thing. Whenever you get rid of one, it's always the one you like the most, so you think you'll get the most money for, when it's not necessarily true. You just get one of the one you have the most emotional attachment to. So then you're extra sad when you never find it again. Yeah, it's very exciting.
All right. And I know, based on the little bit I've heard you talk on shows, I'm pretty sure you're a Simpsons fan.
Oh, huge. My son just got into it, so it's even better now. I get to relive it from the beginning.
Sweet. There's I think it was Lisa's violin, or someone's, Krusty's daughter's violin, where the mob guys are checking it out. Like, it's not worth much, but its sentimental value is through the roof.
Yeah, spot on.
Oh, gosh. You mentioned Bob Odenkirk. Did you actually, I know you've been doing this for a little while. Have you crossed paths with Bob?
Not really. I saw him one time. Where was it? It was at the comic book store that used to be in LA. They used to do stand-up comedy there. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Okay.
It was in the basement there. He was doing the set, but this had to be a decade ago, but no, I've never really met him. No.
And I'm sure he was in a great mood when he was doing that set. So
I'm sure.
He's so, it bums me out about Bob, because I'm like, you're so talented. You've done so many things. Like, enjoy some of this. Like, he always finds the negative. And I'm like, I guess that's a normal comedian thing to do, but I'm like, man, you've done some awesome stuff. Like,
yeah, I think it's why I relate to him. Like, but it is hard. He is like that for sure. Where I read his book, and it was interesting to see like what he's been able to do and find. Like, he used to be a real comedy snob, which didn't surprise me at all. So, you know, it was difficult for him to get. Once he was a writer on SNL, he then joined Second City. Like, his whole story is kind of crazy. And yeah, he's a very, very fascinating guy, and like the route that he took. But he did go through that like alt comic, too good for the laugh in the room, sort of that dickhead, you know, phase that everybody sort of goes through, where they're against what they're doing because they think they're better than it. And eventually you find out, like, he talked about how when he saw Adam Sandler come in and start pitching everything, and it's like, I want to do Opera Man. Like, he's like, oh yeah, comedy's supposed to be fun. Like, I can just have fun. And I think that's why Adam Sandler's lasted so long and people love him, and I love him, is because he's never lost that. He's always had that attitude of like, this should just be a good time.
Yeah. He doesn't care. He's like, I'll make as many Netflix movies as I want, and I'll put on a dress and be my sister, and you know, I don't care.
Yeah. We can forgive Jack and Jill, because you make uncut gems and you're reminded of what an absolute brilliant actor he can be.
Right. And Punch Drunk Love took a turn.
That was really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thomas Anderson. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I did not expect this, but I'm
like, when you
can
hold your own with like Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, you're doing something right, you know. And, you know, RIP, obviously, but that dude was one of the best to ever live.
And he had some humble beginnings too, Twister. So,
yeah, that was the extreme, man.
He's like, oh, he's so eloquent. I'm like, let's watch Twister. You will think otherwise.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, there's also, what was that movie with him and Brendan Fraser? School Ties.
Oh, yeah, School
where
Ties.
Everybody's, hates him for being Jewish. And there's, there's a few, there's a lot of Philip Seymour Hoffman early work.
Oh, one of my favorites. Well, I agree. One of my favorites was Along Came Polly. He was the sidekick on that one.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Let It Rain. He was so good.
Yeah. When he sharts, which I think he may have coined that term.
I never heard that word until that movie.
Nope. And it's been out ever since.
You talked about Saturday Night Live, and I'm glad you brought that up, because anytime I've seen you in skits, or even in your stand-up, I'm just like, this dude would thrive on SNL. Like, was that ever an opportunity for you in your career? Like, did that an audition or any rumblings? Cause you would have been so good in that. Now, obviously, we know where SNL is, but at one, like, You would have been amazing on
I mean,
SNL.
I'd be happy to do it and take the 40-year-old, because they've had a few come on, later in life.
Sure.
Phil Hartman, one of the best ever. Daryl Hammond, oddly enough, came on when he was 40.
Yeah.
A few people that did, I it was something I always wanted. I started at Second City when I was 19 because that's what I wanted to be a part of. So when I started there, I was in classes with like Sam Richardson, who's huge now, and I got to do some improv with a few people that were in classes above me at like this theater called Planet Ant, which was like Tim Robinson, who has his own, show at on Netflix and all that stuff. And I got to work with a lot of great people in improv in Michigan. There were really just brilliant minds that came out of here. Keegan-Michael Key came out of Second City, Detroit, and all that. So I
Yeah.
was that was kind of the goal, to be honest with you. Like from the beginning, it was SNL or something like it, and I just started doing stand up, and I sort of just became a road dog. And I don't know if I gave up on it or I just couldn't figure it. I liked doing comedy for money, and I enjoyed what I was doing, and it's what I've been doing since I was about 20.
That's amazing.
So up until 6 years ago when I got on the Anthony Cumia show, but it's like other than that, I've been doing it my whole career.
Yeah, there's worse ways to there's make to make a living. So,
Oh
no
yeah.
jokes. Yeah. I've done them plenty.
Oh yeah.
Dude, the Keegan thing, him and Carell both auditioned for SNL and I'm just like, how'd they not get, I mean, obviously Keegan thrived in Mad TV, which is severely underrated, but yeah, it's amazing that guy did not get SNL. Like,
Yeah, that's an odd. Well, it seemed like for a long time, Lorne Michaels didn't know what to do with a lot of black people, where you had like Dean Edwards was phenomenal, but was
Yeah.
never used right on that show. Jerry Minor, who was out of Detroit, was great, but I think he lasted a season. He like, and also Eddie Murphy wasn't brought on by Lorne Michaels. That's when they had changed regime. So people don't really
Oh.
realize that, like, the most popular cast member, really the most popular black cast member ever, wasn't even brought on by Lorne.
He
So, I
saved the
mean, other
show.
than, yeah, oh, he did. I mean, and Kenan Thompson arguably has saved the show. Now, some people say they don't like him. I don't know how you can't. I think he's funny. But that's just my opinion. He's been on there for like 20 years, I think, at this point.
Yeah, he's got Tim Meadows beat.
Tim Meadows was a great, great performer. Like, he was somebody who I think was used properly, for exactly who he was able to play, and he's in some of the best sketches that were ever on that show.
Oh,
So
100%. Yeah.
yeah,
He
and he was
did.
another Second City
Yeah.
guy. Sorry,
That makes
interrupt
sense.
you.
No, you're fine. No, he did a skit. It's one of my favorites of all time. Christopher Walken, the Census Bureau skit.
Oh yeah, when he goes to his yeah,
Yeah.
his house
How
and
many
he's
people
like,
live in this house? About
yeah.
80.
Yeah. And he's like, so just you then by the second part? It's like, well, how many aren't cats? It's like,
Oh gosh. I can go forever about walking. I am glad you brought up Phil Hartman. Honestly, I have this in my notes, not making this up. I was going to ask about influences and I was going to guess one of them, and I was going to guess Phil Hartman based on your cadence. It reminds me so much of Phil Hartman. So,
thank you.
yeah, just that proper, like, that proper dictation at times, like that Phil Hartman had. So, safe to say he was a guy you definitely were a fan of. So,
Huge. Like I've said
yeah.
many times, I honestly think that he was the greatest cast member in the history of SNL. I'd probably put him up there with Dana Carvey for saving the show, but Phil Hartman just seemed to be somebody who could do anybody. And when he did it, it was dynamic. And if he needed to be the second, like, talk about the Matt Foley sketch where he's the dad in the scene. He doesn't mind taking a back seat, making Chris look amazing, but he's playing it perfectly. Everybody's dying laughing. You can tell he wants to laugh, but he's still straight faced. He's still playing. He's still in the moment. Very few people did what he did the way that he did it. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but it's like
No.
you go back to like Pee-wee's Playhouse, where he started on, and then he
Yeah.
ends up on SNL. And then, I mean, it just sucks that his transition into movies just wasn't great before his wife shot him, obviously. But, it's like,
kind of gets in the way of some stuff when your
yeah,
wife
kind of
shoots you.
sucks. Yeah. When it's like, you had like House Guest with Sinbad and a bunch of other movies that just aren't like, they're just not very good, and it's a greedy, like, he's great in it, but it's not a good movie. You know, he was always, he would always shine through, but a lot of the projects that he got after SNL just weren't fantastic.
Yeah,
Besides maybe
his.
CB4 when he plays Al Gore, basically.
Oh, right. I liked his little small part in So I Married an Axe Murderer, Vicky.
That
Thought
was
that was
brilliant. That's a great movie, though, that people
so
don't
good.
realize. Yeah.
So underrated. I'm like, watch Mike Myers. That's the first time you hear the Scottish accent in a movie with
Yep.
from him, is him playing his dad. My favorite Christmas movie of all time is with Phil Hartman. It is Jingle All the Way. So Phil
Oh, very,
Hartman,
yeah.
so good in that.
Yeah, he is great in that. That is true. That's a great kids movie.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yes. The oh gosh, yeah, he plays that part perfect. So I love that you were a fan of Phil Hartman. That all makes sense now. That I've got closure with that theory. So
Yes.
I think another thing you would be amazing on. Did you grow up watching Mystery Science Theater 3000? Were you a fan of that?
Yes. Yeah,
Okay.
I was. I was especially, I think it was in middle school when I used to be on Comedy Central, kind of in the
Yes.
mornings when all they had was that SNL reruns and Absolutely Fabulous,
Yep.
AbFab,
Ab
and
Fab.
Kids in the Hall. Yeah, those were
Oh,
the, yeah.
that's like we had a proper country, didn't we?
We did. It was good. And Kids in the Hall came from Canada. It was great. Yeah. But we had it. It was good times.
that I'm usually not a fan of guys doing drag, and that was the one show where I'm like, every sketch they're in drag, and this is
Well,
amazing.
they played women with dignity and not ridiculous and like absurd, where it was like, I guess for lack of a better term, just like gay, like pointless and
Yeah.
like just poking fun. They
Yep.
played them as characters.
Yeah.
So it was actually really funny the way that they would play them. And they were always irreverent. They were more irreverent than any show I had seen. I remember, because I grew up in Detroit on the Windsor border. I would watch Kids in the Hall come over on the CBC when I was young, and I couldn't believe like what they would get away with at like whatever, I think it was like 9 o'clock at night when it aired or something.
Yep.
But dude, it was brilliant. Like and yeah, to this day I still think like I watched the new season. I was watching a little bit of it last night, and it's cool that they put it out. I got to interview Bruce McCulloch once. It was
Oh,
really
cool.
cool. And yeah, like dude, I just they're brilliant, and I think the movie Mind Candy was such a an amazing masterpiece well before its time that
Yep.
it basically called out how everything would happen within the next 15 years.
Nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did a I was an improv I was in an improv group very briefly. It was not for me, but I in that during that time, Kevin McDonald came and did like a little workshop with
Yeah.
us, talked about how they came up with their skits and how it started off as improv and just worked its way into some structure. And yeah, that was cool to like and to see him quickly shift because he would do a character really quick. Like an act out, that just blew me away. How quick he was to like go from normal to boom character. It was, yeah, blew me away. It was brilliant.
Right.
So,
Yeah. Yeah, that's he's also who they say is the funniest one. And
I
I
believe it.
remember I was doing, I think it was the Todd and Tyler show one time in Omaha, which is a radio show, and they called in to promote their show. And it was, dude, it was just brilliant. Like the way that they were just flying on improv on the phone, it was so much fun. And it was when Kids in the Hall was touring again. And dude, it was the best. Like they were And it, they had been irreverent. My friend was telling me in the 1980s he saw them in New York. So it was probably the late 80s. And Scott Thompson used to come. He would fly into the show as the only gay cast member as the AIDS fairy, and sprinkle AIDS dust all over the crowd, which was glitter, which people did not find funny at all, obviously, in the 1980s. You know, and it's like, but they still did it every night, like not caring what the reaction was, just because they found it funny to have the only gay cast member give AIDS to the audience.
Right. How's that not? Yeah.
Like,
Now, if you do that in Canada now, you'd go to jail for life, I'm pretty sure. So,
yeah, it's not
yeah.
working out there anymore for comedy, but at one time it was one of my favorite places to perform.
Yeah, I got to be there for a week in Calgary at the Comedy Cave, and That was fun. That was fun to see what worked, what didn't work, and how much people there hate their government, which I wasn't expecting. So,
Yeah, it's pretty staggering.
Now with your how you started when you were 20. So how long have you been doing stand up now?
I have been doing it for 20 years. And then I had been doing improv before that, so I guess I've been in it almost 22 years, 21 years.
Because I've seen even like from recent videos. I don't know what year that your story came out on that this is not happening with Comedy Central, but you have stories, but you also aren't afraid to tell quick jokes, which I really appreciate.
Thank you.
So where do you feel like you fall in line more? Do you like the quicker jokes? Do you like stories more, or did you start out doing stories then do quick jokes?
Oh no, I started out with quick jokes and being very clean. Like I would open for a lot of clean guys for my first few years because I was just trying to work, which I do recommend, you know. Well, I did. I don't think it matters anymore, but I think back in the days of the club, like the way the clubs were just to get you to move up and work with certain people, it was a good way to work clean just so you could actually get actual time from the club owner. But no, I started with very quick jokes, very fast, a lot of one-liners. And over time, I gradually became, you know, more of who I was and would tell my story and that sort of thing. And by the time, sorry, since
You're
I have
good.
you, I've already done two shows for your audience.
Yes.
And by the time I got on This Is Not Happening, I had been doing more stories that were about my addiction, my recovery, what had gone on in my youth, that sort of thing. So it was able for me. I was able to talk about those things in a way that was funny. And I think you have to earn those chops that before an audience can trust you.
I respect that because because that's a struggle the more I do this where I'm like, man, I don't know, after hearing Jay Leno's story on like podcasts that he's been on now, I'm like, he's not afraid just to be a quick joke teller. I mean, yeah, there's some stories here and there, but the more you do it, you're like, well, do people because people are really into depth now and hearing about their therapy sessions, which I'm just not doing that.
No, it's difficult because it's they don't understand that there's a get you can make fun of that and find comedy in it, but we're also living in a time where people don't understand what real trauma is, especially when they're a little younger and they think they have it, and they're on stage talking about very benign shit, and it's just nauseating. It's not funny. It's not they don't know where to find the humor because they never learned how to write the joke before. It's fun. Yeah, it just gnaws at you as an audience member. And as a storyteller, it's like, dude, have a punchline, have a point.
Pay it off. Have a payoff when you're telling this long story. And sometimes it's a dark payoff, but you got to get that reaction. I get that. So 20 years in, you also I was excited that you were talking about A Normal World. You talked about a guy with a cocaine nose, and I immediately knew who you were talking about.
You've
And
told, yeah, you said
I emailed you. I'm like, dude,
that.
I thought it was a live show. I can't remember, but I was emailing. I'm like, was that Tom Sobel? And sure enough, it was. RIP Tom. Did you? So you've worked. You did some stuff for Tom.
Oh yeah, I mean back 20 years ago, I opened at his club all the time, was featuring, headlining. Back when it was the Comedy Caravan in Louisville.
I know that place. I have a special place in my heart for Tom because starting out wasn't getting a lot of stage time in Nashville, so he gave me stage time. I was just emailing for free spots to do guest spots, and that led to him asking me to host for 50 or 100 bucks, and I was like, so I
Did he
would
give you the speech?
just have fun, or he would
No,
always
I
say
can remember
that.
in the beginning it would be like, I don't care if you're Sinbad or Jesus Christ himself, you must come here and showcase for me, and then I will decide if you would. And I remember the first time I went with Henry Cho. It was like a really clean comic.
Oh, yeah, I know
And
Henry.
I opened Henry's special and I would tour with Henry a little bit back in the day. And yeah, so I went in kind of before doing that, the audition. So he was watching me like a hawk, but when I met him, like he had that hole in his nose, and I was like, what happened there? And I'd done my fair share of cocaine, and you know, Henry's just like, oh, it's cocaine. Yes, yeah.
Or
And
Hidden
then I
Place.
saw him years later as Kind of Fixed.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tom, yeah, dude, Tom was a talker. I liked him. But yeah, he was just one of those guys that he said very little to say, but a long way to say
Took a long way to say it,
it.
and you would it was a lot of that.
Yeah, he went, oh, well. He's
Yeah.
like, could I remember one time me and Matt McClowry were at his club. He's like, can I tell you a restaurant recommendation? We're like, what do you like? We're like, barbecue. He goes, well, I don't know about one here. We're like, pizza? And he's like, well, I'm not really sure what the best pizza is. We're like, burgers? And he's like, in the parking lot, right there is a diner. And it's like, why didn't you just tell us to go to the diner? If like your friend owns, like, this is a
Right.
ridiculous conversation. Like, you're pretending to be a man about town. Like, just why have the conversation?
Right. He came in confident. He came in
Yes,
confident.
he did. Came in swinging.
I'm gonna try to beat the Zoom time here. It's got us at 2 minutes and 27 seconds.
You got it. Okay.
All right. I wanted to touch on that Kramer story. Essentially, you opened up for him and he wasn't pleasant, and you made him pay for that.
Yes, I was doing a show with him where he was just a guest on the show, and I
Yeah.
had to go up on stage. He was a total asshole to me backstage and said I couldn't shake his hand or whatever
Yeah.
when I brought him up. And then so I went out, brought him up, and then I stood on stage with my hand out, forcing him to shake it. Then I watched him eat a dick because I deliberately did a set that destroyed him. Then I had to run out, and then he didn't shake my hand, but he patted me on the back, and he was really cruel to me backstage. And then maybe I want to say, long story short, a week later, the fiasco happened that ended his career.
Yes.
And yeah, I don't want to say that I was happy, but it was pretty fun.
Because I was gonna give my next question was this right before or after, was this how soon before was the meltdown? So
It was like a week and a half, yeah.
that was oh gosh. And it's such a bummer because again, we loved him growing up, and that's how
I
he
couldn't watch the show for like 4 years, and now I don't
right.
care. But it's like, yeah, after a while, I just, it was so, it, maybe he was having an off night. I don't know, but he was just an extraordinary prick to the point that I remembered it. And I've met a plenty of pricks in this business, but he
Right.
stood out.
Yeah, you don't want to meet your heroes sometimes. So, no.
No.
Well, I hope to talk more about that. If you're up for it, love to have you on again at some point.
Absolutely.
You're gonna be at Zany's. I'm gonna check that out. And then I can't wait to watch Normal World this time because I can't wait to hear what you're gonna say about P. Diddy and the bridge collapse. I'm sure you addressed both.
We did, yes, we did one, I think, for sure. So, yeah,
Awesome.
it'll be on
Sweet.
tonight.
I can't wait to watch it, Dave. Thank you so much for being so cool on the show. And I can't wait to talk again.
Cool, thanks for having me.